You're listening to the Prepper Recon Podcast. For questions, comments, and podcast archives, go to PrepperRecon.com. Ready-Made Resources has a limited number of PVS-30 night vision scopes for $4,700. These are the top-of-the-line night vision scopes used by the U.S. military, which normally sell for over $11,000. Turn your 12-hour rifle into a 24-hour rifle. Visit Ready-Made Resources to get your PVS-30 today. Trading Post in the Woods is ran by veteran crisis responders who know how important it is to be prepared. They specialize in comprehensive natural survival remedy kits, preparedness and homesteading supplies, as well as skills training. Visit them online today at tradingpostinthewoods.com. Today's guest is ham radio operator and author Ron Good. Ron, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Oh, absolutely. Now, since this is your first time on the show, why don't you introduce yourself and tell the folks a little bit about yourself and give us some background and let us know who Ron Good is.
Sure. I'm actually from the Florida area, south of where you're currently living, and was there as a police officer with two different agencies for 15 years. And then I took an early out retirement at the ripe old age of 35 to go to Bible college and seminary, and received an associate's, then bachelor's, then master of arts degree, and was in ministry for 20 years. And most recently, I stepped away from that to move to be closer to my in-laws. My wife and I decided that as we looked around at the world, there were some things going on that were unsettling to us, like a lot of folks, and began preparing for those difficult times that the scriptures are warning us about. And so we had some property here for a while, and we decided to go ahead and develop it and begin that process. I've been a ham radio operator for 30-plus years, kind of off and on for a while. And most recently, I got into it, you know, a little more and a little more. So one of the things that my wife did insist upon when we moved here was she didn't want all of this gear in our house. So I was blessed by being able to put in my man cave. And so I've got a ham radio shack that is totally separate from our home. And I can walk out there and play to my heart's content and not really mess with anybody. So that's kind of me in a nutshell.
And you've got a new book out. Tell us about that.
Yes. Well, you know, I've been reading quite a few books on prepping, and I came across an interesting description of a person called the gray man, and that's the one that wants to blend in with their surroundings. And I began thinking about that. It's kind of like, well, gray man, Graham. That would be neat for the ham radio operator that, you know, and wants to, you know, be low-keyed. And so, ironically, some of the best my best thoughts, and I don't know where this ever comes from, but some of my best thoughts come when I'm taking a shower. Okay, some people sing in the shower. That's not what I do. You don't want me to sing. But I was in there one day, and it's like, what if you were to create a fictional book about a ham radio operator who kind of stumbles across a new form of communication and the government gets wind of that and they come calling? And that was basically the foundation for which this book was written. A little bit of the lead character is actually some of my life experiences. And so you have this guy that's retired law enforcement. He is a avid ham radio operator, and he starts this experimentation. And he takes a computer and an old cell phone and a keyer, and just through kind of trial and error, he comes up with what he calls para-CW. And, again, this is fiction. But this is a signal that kind of attaches itself to a cell phone carrier signal, and it transmits in very, very low power, Morse code. And so as he is talking about this with his ham radio club, you know, that in the event that the grid were to go down, this signal still would get through and transmit Morse code. And those that have this app that he created could actually see the Morse code come across the screen, an app on their cell phone, and immediately it's translated from code what is readable, you know, just characters that you can read. So it sounds kind of far-fetched, but in this day and age, there's so many things that smartphones are doing, maybe it's not as far-fetched as we think. And so the FCC receives a bulletin from, you know, other government agencies like the FBI and CIA that says, hey, we're looking for all kinds of different forms of communication that can help us out. And if you come across anything, let us know, because our people in the field could maybe use this to communicate with us that nobody would be able to see what they're doing. And so the FCC hears about it, and they send a young rookie agent out to meet with the lead character. His name is Don Wood, and he is a pretty arrogant young guy, the FCC agent. And the next thing you know, he is kind of reading between the lines, because Don Wood makes a comment as he's explaining how this works, that if the grid were to ever go down, then this signal would still get through. Well, he kind of locks on to that, goes back to the bureau, and tells his boss that, and another FCC agent. And the next thing you know, another agent by the name of Sean Carrick is calling his buddy with the FBI and saying, hey, this might be something, it might not be, but you want to check into it. Well, as the story progresses, the FBI gets involved. They come calling to the Woods residence with a search warrant, even though they don't have probable cause. It's pure speculation. So we're talking about government overreach here, listed in this para-CW, and they come calling to get it. Well, he is not real quick. Don Wood is not real quick to relinquish it, and says, you know, I'm not going to do that right now, because I honestly think that you're going to use this for more than what you say you are. And the end result is there's kind of a battle that takes place between Don and his wife, Nikki, and the FBI and the FCC. And so the book comes to kind of a gut-wrenching conclusion for Don Wood, and I don't want to give away too much of it. And he realizes now that the government is really overstepping their boundaries and will do whatever it takes to get a hold of this thing that he has kind of stumbled across. And even the ham radio club that he is involved in, they kind of hold a meeting and they decide maybe it's time for Don to go, because we don't want, you know, the government coming in here snooping around in our business and stuff. So that's it in a nutshell. And the interesting thing is, you know, before I began even writing this, and the seed was there and I'm kind of plotting this out, I began searching, are there any books even close to this from a ham radio perspective, you know, amateur radio? And there's some books out there, but a lot of them were written, you know, back in the 80s. They're kind of geared toward the youth. And there's not really been anything written like this that I'm aware of. And when I spoke to the advertising department at the American Radio Relay League, who puts out the QST publication, and I talked to one of their people, they said, we've never seen anything like this at all. I thought, okay, maybe I could be on to something. Maybe it could fly. It won't fly. The other thing, interdispersed within the book, you know, Don and his wife, Nikki, are both Christians, and they have a very high reliance upon God to help them make a decision in what to do. You know, do they compromise their beliefs because the government wants something? And, you know, it's not laden with scripture, so to speak, but there is a lot of Christian attributes that are in the book as they depend upon God. So that's kind of it in about a, what, 3 or 4 minute synopsis.
And the gray ham is it's obviously something that ham operators are going to really enjoy, but you've explained everything in such a way that even somebody that's not familiar with the ham jargon is still going to be able to understand it and really enjoy the book. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah. I mean, I use, terminology about different type of gear, the type of gear, for instance, HF gear that I actually use, the brand name. I use a lot of Yaesu equipment. I talk about antennas. I talk about PSK-31, some of the different digital modes. So there's a lot of basic amateur radio stuff that even the non-ham could read through and possibly pique their interest in it. I talk about some aspects of prepping, because I'm basically new at that, and I've learned a lot from my father-in-law. So that's even interdispersed in there. And by the way, I've learned a lot from you through your books and your website, too. So I want to say that.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. And listening to what others have to say. But, yeah, I'm hopeful that, the amateur radio operator will read it and go, wow, maybe our government is doing a little bit more than they should be, a little more intrusive than they should be. And I even went as far as to contact the FCC and talk to a FCC enforcement agent about them and their position, because I needed clarification on a few things to make sure that it was correct as I put it in the book. And they were very gracious. I don't think they know that I'm writing a book, but they were very gracious, and saying, well, this is what FCC enforcement agents do, and this is what they don't do, and so on.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. The dollar's lost over 90% of its purchasing power since 1971. Silver, on the other hand, has proven to be a very stable form of wealth preservation over the years. And where do you buy silver? Silver.com, of course. Silver.com offers fantastic prices on gold and silver. Check out silver.com today. Whether your plan is to bug out or bug in, CampingSurvival.com has all of your preparedness needs, including fish antibiotics, long-term storage food, and water filters. Use coupon code PREPRECON for 5% off your order at CampingSurvival.com. And so you mentioned that you're a Christian, and it's a Christian book, so it's a family friendly read. So there's no profanity and no embarrassing sex scenes.
No, you're absolutely right. There are none. Even probably the strongest language in there would be crap. I mean, if that's a bad word, I'm sorry, but that's probably the strongest language that's in the entire book. So yeah, anybody could pick it up and read it. It is geared more toward the adult, though, I think, or maybe from teen upward into the adult.
Yeah, but that's something that a lot of our listeners appreciate, to have something that's just not full of filthy languages. There's so much stuff out there that's that you hear so many great comments about, except there's always the but. It's got some really questionable language in it. So, me and several other people like myself, we just don't read it. If it's got that kind of language in it, we just won't read it. So thank you so much for writing a book that doesn't grieve the Holy Spirit inside of us when we read it. Now, when did you first get into ham radio? You said you'd gotten into it for about 30 years ago. And so, what was the catalyst? Where were you and how did you get into it?
Well, it's probably been a little longer than 30 years. Having been in law enforcement in Florida, a good buddy of mine was the Florida State Trooper, Highway Patrol. And I would go out and ride with him when I was off duty from the agency that I worked at. And he had all these antennas on his car that was an HF and 2 meter and a low jack system and so on. And he had a HF rig in his car. And we began talking about it, and he said, you know, have you ever considered this? Well, I'd had a CB radio like a lot of, you know, people during that time. And I said, no, not really. He said, well, why don't you come to the ham radio club that I'm a member of? And he kind of mentored me. And this was back in the day where you come in as a novice at, you know, the lowest class license, and you had to do the code at 5 words a minute. And then from there, you would go to a technician and then a general class at 13 words a minute on the code, and then advanced. And then you would go to the extra class. And if memory serves me right, it was, what, 21 words per minute on the code, 21 or 23. I don't recall off the top of my head. But I worked my way up, and I now hold an extra class license. I don't use the code. I'll be the first to admit that, like I used to. But he kind of got me into it. And, you know, I think it's like any hobby. Once you start to get into it and the bug bites you, you go full bore. And the next thing you know, I've got antennas all over the place and probably more gear than I needed and so on. But to me, it is such a neat hobby because, you know, you've got this radio of 100 watts. I've got a linear amplifier, too, that I have in my ham shack, but I try and run barefoot at just 100 watts. And you've got this piece of aluminum or whatever sticking up, and you can talk around the world on that. Things are right. And that is just amazing to me that you can do that. You know, you key the mic and you're talking to somebody in another country. And so that kind of got me going, and I've been in it ever since.
And then for the other hams that are listening, what's your call sign?
My call sign is N4WSH. We serve him. That's what the WSH stands for.
Oh, very cool. That's very cool. And you mentioned that you just recently got into prepping. Was there a specific catalyst for that other than your father-in-law just sort of nudging you into it?
Well, I mean, as Christians, we read God's word and understand that at some point in time, Jesus is going to return. And as I continue to look at that, and then you kind of match it up with what's going on in the world, you go, boy, and this is not the world that I grew up in when I was a kid with all of the just blatant in-your-face sin, as if people were saying what was evil is now good and what is good is now evil. And so when I kind of overlaid that to talking to my father-in-law, you know, I started to put two and two together, and that led us to where I think a lot of people today are looking at going, you know, if things really go south, how can I take care of me and my family? Because it's evident the government cannot. I believe Katrina showed us that. And that's kind of what got it going. And then, of course, like a lot of folks, it's very overwhelming at first. Like, well, I need to run out and get this. I'm kind of an analytical person and say, no, let's break this down into components and see what we really need first. And let's get those things, and then we'll work on the other. And so that led us to the rice and beans and staple foods and water and so on and so forth. And then from there, we worked our way up to where we've got, you know, on our property, I've got a generator, and I'm hoping to put in some solar panels, and I've got a sun oven, you know, and those type of things. So it's kind of a lifelong, for me anyway, it's kind of like my walk with the Lord. This is going to be a lifelong journey in the hopes that I never need it, but it will be there if I do.
And after the election, quite a few folks took a couple of months off from prepping. And between Shemita and Hillary, I'll admit I needed a little break myself. What about you? Did you take some time off after the election from your preparedness efforts?
No. I actually kind of ramped it up a little more because I was of the opinion that I believe in this country we have so turned our back against God that no matter who got elected, you know, we may have slowed the process a little bit with the election of Donald Trump, but I think it's still going to happen. He's only one man, okay? And there is such a long history of this journey that it, I don't believe it's something that can be turned around by a man for 4 years or 8 years. Which kind of leads to another thing, and talking to some of my Christian friends, you know, and they say, well, God gave us Donald Trump. And I'm going, you know, that is so dangerous to say that. Can God use him? Absolutely. We see in the Old Testament, God used, you know, kings to bring about his will, either in a positive way or a negative way, Donald Trump. But to say that God gave him to us, you're elevating this man to a very, very high role, which I cannot buy into. I'm thankful that it's him and not the other candidate, I have to admit, because with what we've put up with over the past 8 years, I think we would be really running headlong down, you know, into the toilet, so to speak, had Hillary gotten elected. Open borders, you know, anything and everything goes. And I think he's really, I think President Trump is maybe slowing that down quite a bit. But overall, he's just one person. He cannot do it all. And he's kind of fighting a very big battle.
Yeah, and, you know, his track record isn't that solid. He's been on both sides of the fence, and, you know, he's got folks from both sides of the fence speaking in his ear in his administration in the West Wing, you know. And unfortunately, it looks like some of the folks from the wrong side of the fence are getting a little bit more attention from him these days. Jared Kushner and Ivanka, which are, you know, very extreme left liberals, and it seems like they're getting a lot more of his time and attention than Steve Bannon and Kellyanne Conway are these days. So he may have been given to us by God, and he may have been given to us by God as a judgment. You know, that's something that we don't really know. So I'm with you in questioning whether or not he was given to us by God as a blessing. And yes, I'll certainly take him over Hillary any day. But, you know, the fact that he, you know, somebody that owned casinos and strip clubs, was the person that Christians fawned over in the primary. Yes, once the primaries were over, you know, yeah, I was a Trump fan too. But all the way through the primaries, I was so hoping that we'd get somebody much more like a Rand Paul or a Huckabee or somebody like that, that would have been much more conservative in their personal principles and, you know, much more well-versed in the Constitution than Donald Trump. And, you know, and at the same time, it could have been worse. We could have got another Bush. Or, you know, we could have got a, God forbid, Lindsey Graham or somebody like that. They could have been a much worse Republican so he wasn't the worst either. So, but I'm like you. I'm slow to say that he's too much of a blessing. While I am happy that he got in there rather than Hillary. That's the end of the first half of my interview with Ron Good. Tune in next week for the rest of the show.
In the Days of Elijah, Book 2, Wormwood, by best-selling author Mark Goodwin. Everett and Courtney Carl have survived the Seven Seal Judgments, which devastated the planet. But have their efforts to stay alive been in vain? The next series of judgments to fall upon the earth are known as the Seven Trumpets. Within this series of cataclysms is the earth's collision with a giant asteroid known as Wormwood. The comet will poison much of the planet's fresh water supplies, making survival nearly impossible. With each subsequent trumpet judgment, their odds of living grow slimmer. If Everett and Courtney are to survive, they'll need perseverance, faith, and a great outpouring of providence from the Almighty. Buy your copy of The Days of Elijah, Book 2, Wormwood, in paperback, Kindle, or audio edition from Amazon.com today.